بس أفضل شو بخلوش اللي نحن الأهتمة we met that time on the 5th of this month and we requested the ICT staff to correct some few things and processes in the staging of their annual report, and we are meeting today hoping that those issues have indeed been corrected. We'll hear if the ICT is taking us through. We are aware of the fact that the Minister of Police was not in the country for almost the whole of last week and so on, but we do believe that on his return from wherever, he managed to assist us so that we can proceed with the meeting. As I indicated last week, on the 5th of November, we appreciate the fact that the ICD for the first time in fact after 5 years, this time it received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General. And that we understand it doesn't happen on its own. It actually talks to the systems, that financial systems that we want to believe are now in place. And however, there are issues that the Auditor General is raising as matters of emphasis, which we think the ICD will be in a position to correct, so that not just an unqualified audit opinion that they receive, but indeed a clean audit opinion in terms of their financial management, but also in terms of their performance. We are going to immediately allow the ICT, because I think the ICT knows members of parliament. We are not meeting for the first time. We are going to allow the ICT to make a presentation. After that, we are going to allow members to ask questions and then the ICT to respond. We will request members to at least ask 3 questions at each member, at least 3 questions, so that you have then to prioritize our questions. 3 questions so that every other member can have an opportunity to ask a question. And we will have as many rounds of question asking and so on as we want. And therefore we'll run this meeting in the manner that actually moves us forward or takes us forward. Executive Director.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues. We appreciate this opportunity to come again to the Portfolio Committee, and we want to also thank the Chairperson for her leadership in terms of taking us forward. And we will this morning try to be 1 hour. I think that was what the Chair's direction was, and we will try to stick to the time limit and deal with the issues. Chairperson, just maybe the one issue in terms of the ATC, the Minister titled the replacement of the ICD report, and it has been referred, so that's been done. Chairperson, to start immediately, some highlights in the past here include the following. There was substantial improvement in the financial management of the department. As indicated, the department received unqualified support from Malaysia after 5 years of qualified support. Then just briefly in terms of performance information, a total of 6377 complaints were received during the financial year, and 98% were allocated within the specified 48 hours. Then the recommendations to the DPP, a number of 526, and a total of 1,666 recommendations to SAPS management with regard to various offences. Then in terms of criminal offences, 48 cases were taken forward, and 25 members were convicted in relation to deaths in police custody and deaths as a result of police action. And 22 convictions were related to other criminal offences. Then a new strategic plan for the organisation was developed that focuses on the investigation of priority crimes committed by members of the SAPS and MPS. And I think, Chair, I think you put it correct. There's still a lot that we will have to do going forward. And I've also indicated that in my preface, that we will have to place further focus on the financial management architecture of the department going forward. Very important. We'll have to improve performance reporting, as indicated by the AG. Then also the long-standing question of dealing with the gender imbalance in senior management. We have been able now in the last 2 months to replace the one senior manager, HRM, with an AG. So at least in terms of the SMS group, we are making progress. Then strengthening good governance practice and ethical conduct. At the end of the day, we are an oversight institution, and we must be able that all our staff members adhere to the strictest code of ethics in terms of dealing with cases investigated by the police, and that's going to be a major focus. Then strengthening national and provincial management. We've also indicated that in our discussions with the Portfolio Committee in February at Kibitschkoen, that there's major work to be done. We must be able to strengthen our current national and provincial management going forward. And then also importantly, increasing the public awareness regarding the role of the independent oversight institution that aims to promote police conduct in line with the Constitution. We know that our current public awareness program is not efficient, it's not sufficient, and we will have to do a lot more. Then, Chairperson, the next slide. We've also indicated in the report of the accounting officer that in terms of the legislative process, the reorganization project is underway. There was a task team appointed in the steering committee. There was 2 workshops done on the police civilian oversight and also the matter of investigating torture by members of SAPS. And the progress up to the end of the financial year was 2 steering committee meetings and then also consultations with the DPSA, National Treasury, Auditor General, and consultations with the relevant labour unions. Then, just in brief, in terms of Programme 1, a revised ICD mission statement was included in the strat plan. Then a dedicated program on upholding of values and integrity within the department. The compilation and a rollout of ethics risk training program, a monthly risk reporting. And then a dedicated focus on attendance to ICD ethics helpline complaints and inquiries, as well as a dedicated helpline. One of the issues in the past, and I think it's going to still be with us for some time, is the issue of vetting. We have upgraded the management in the security component. We've upgraded the post from assistant director to deputy director. We've also, in terms of our gender focus, appointed a lady in that post. And we're busy also with the review of the security system and implementation of stringent security procedures, and also a reprioritization of the new security vetting for all staff members. Then, Chairperson, to go to Program 2. A unique monthly performance reporting template was developed because I think at the beginning of when I came in August, it was quite clear that the reporting in terms of information was not sufficient, and there was a template designed. A workshop was also done with regard to that template and to ensure this constant monitoring and evaluation of performance. There was one referral by the Minister of Police in the year under review, and that was the investigation of escapes in custody of SAPS. Chairperson, I just want to refer to 3 high-profile cases in brief. The Luawate case, where Ms. Olga Katana was killed in the Victoria, the Kenton Park case, where an unknown lady was apparently raped, and the Robbie Rich matter, where the little 3-year-old were killed as well. I just want to highlight those 3 cases. All those 3 cases, I personally interacted with the family and the lawyers and visited the bereaved members. And I think that also highlights the important role of independent complaints directors, because there was a huge concern by those family members and concerned lawyers that we will be influenced by the police in terms of our investigation. And we had to give assurance to those families that it will be independent. And both of these 3 cases are making headway. The Luati case is going forward. The Kenton Park case, there was in the disciplinary matter, there was a conviction, and the Robbie Rich case is currently in court. Then program three, in brief, Chair, the database management statistics, I think also a long time concern within the department. We're currently busy with implementing a new database system. It will still take some time, but I think it's going to be vital moving forward. Then the attendance to presidential hotline complaints. I think at the beginning of that process, all departments are now under scrutiny for how do we respond to that. I think in the beginning last year, we were not there where we should be. But I think currently we are really dealing with all the issues, and I think the complaints are not very much. So we really making headway there. Then in terms of the review of the state of financial affairs, going forward as well, and I think it's also getting expertise, especially in the financial field, that the creation of a new staff establishment and macro structure based on the status of the department as a national department should be a major focus going forward as well with regard to the new legislation. Then spending trends, there was a 10 million rand underspending, and that really flows from the non-implementation of the call centre, also the non-relocation of the national office, and then also some invoices of public works that wasn't forwarded in time, so that's more or less 10 million that we returned to National Treasury. Then, Chair, just with regard to donor funds, the SACETA gave us some assistance and 55 ICD investigators were trained by a private service provider, and all the investigators passed the final test. Then we refer to the question of corporate governance arrangements. The post of manager, ethics and risk was due to be filled early in the second semester of the financial year. All employees had to complete the annual conflict of interest declaration form. And then also the special training on ICD4 values were undertaken during the year. Then, Chair, asset management has been a big problem for the department. I mean, that was the main reason for the qualified audit during the last 5-6 years. And there was a major effort at all top management meetings that then CFO had to report in writing on a weekly basis on those audit progress. We've been able to ensure that all assets were recorded on the Logan Asset Register. An additional electronic asset management system has been procured to improve physical verification of official assets, and then the application of the fair value formula in respect of the assets on the asset register also contributed that we achieved then the unqualified audit. Performance information, and the AG referred also to that as a matter of concern. And I think that is also for us a major concern, because from next year onwards, the AG is going to also give an opinion on performance information. And that's where we asked on the assistance of a consultant to develop that monthly report template that we have indicated to ensure that we submit a comprehensive report to the executive authority. Then the last slide. Prime notifications to the audit report. All assets have been recorded and currently being uniquely barcoded. Policies have been reviewed to enhance corporate governance and litigation of powers, rights and the PFMA. And the authority of the county office has been updated. And we also look at our performance agreements and targets to ensure that it is properly measured. Chairperson, that is in brief the report of the county officer and the dialogue. In terms of time, I will immediately give an opportunity for the program once manager.
Thanks to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I'm going to take you through the activities of Project 1. The second slide there indicates the objective of the program, which is to provide the overall management and organizational department. The program consists of 9 units. HR, finance, internal audit, legal services, security, labor, training, and service delivery, employee wellness, special programs, ethics and risk management. Now, Chairperson, the total number of open posts in this financial year was 287, and then 91 of those fall under program 1, and then 151 under investigation, and 45 under program 3. Now, the breakdown of the staff person in terms of the office, so into different offices, I won't be going through each one of those numbers. Safe to say that the committee may take note of the fact that all staff offices have got 4 staff persons. And in total, 188 of the 287 positions are in the province, and 99 are in the admission office. During the year under review, we had 35 staff persons who left the department, and then 2 were for death, and then 11 were designations, and 2 were dismissals, and then 1 staff member retired, and 19 of our staff members transferred to other government departments on probation. There was a general raise 2 issues under the program. One was about a position whose title had not been approved. In fact, the Ethics and Risk Management post, the title was changed when we were in this position. And then, back then, by the end of, in the middle of September this year, we managed to change the title. And then the other 2 issues were about 2 employees who received acting allowance for longer than 6 and 12 months, as prescribed in the public sector regulation. But now, as an action plan, what we need the program is to indicate in each and every acting letter the period that the person is going to be acting, the start date of the acting, and the last day of office. And we're going to continue to do that. The program has a number of strategic objectives, about 13 of them. And then 60% of those political objectives targets have been met. The ones that we could not meet are, one, the compliance with the Employment Equity Act. This is the issue of 50% women in senior management, as it is indicated. We continually strive to ensure that whenever a senior position becomes vacant, will be filled that position with a female applicant. And the other target that we could not meet is the implementation of the ethics code, where we wanted to workshop our code with our potential suppliers, the suppliers who are in the database. We could not do that because the code was vacant for a long time, and the manager ethics came and joined the department later in the year. But then we will ensure that this in this current financial year, the workshop is held. And the other indicator that we could not meet was the conducting of training on the contingency plan for security issues. Here as well, the target was the 5th of September, not 2010, but then by this date we have not yet employed the new security manager, as the EGM is indicated. The post was also vacant, and then she joined us later in the year. Now, the second slide talks to the action plan, as I've indicated, to address those targets which have not been met. The issue of 50% women in senior management is an ongoing exercise, as I've indicated. As and when positions become vacant in this level, we will fill those positions with female applicants. And the implementation of the code, as I've indicated, there's going to be workshop implementation of training that is going to be happening, as well to ensure that we meet those targets which we could not meet through the course of the financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Program 2, Mr. Velarosu.
Thank you, Vidi. Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, the first slide, that's when the table of contents in terms of that first slide 22. Just move to the next slide. Just to highlight the objectives that the program set itself for the financial year 2009-2010. And in terms of slide 24, chapter 10, these are the highlights of achievement for the program during the financial year. Firstly, just want to emphasize, as the executive director indicated, that the program met all its targets in terms of the target set for the financial year. Also, the implementation of the final operating procedure, which is something that has been a problem over the few years in the past, we ensured that we come up with a uniform final operating procedure, which all provinces now are following to ensure that there is uniformity. The investigation of escapes, I think the ED also referred to that referral that the minister referred to the ICD. And then in the area of skills development, Chairperson, I would also want to indicate that we benefited from the skills levy fund that was given by SACITA, and we were able to train case analysts, monitors, and some of the investigators who completed a certificate program in crime resolving, which was offered by AJN Training Academy. And I also want to indicate that the further 26 case analysts and monitors also attended a basic crime investigation program. This was offered by the SAPS training, social training, housing, and in Bumalanga. But also, Chairperson, although this, we also received a grant to the tune of 2.3 million from GTZ, although this grant, in fact, was only made available in this current financial year. So we'll have more reporting in the 2010-2011 financial year. In terms of performance information, you'll note in terms of slide 25 that the program had a total of 10,437 complaints that it dealt with over the financial year, which comprised of cases that were carried over from the previous financial year, 2008-2009. Totaling 4,060, including the 6,337 that was received during the 2009-2010 financial year. In terms of slide 26, that gives you the breakdown in terms of the different categories. In class 1, we had 1,769 cases of death, DVA 233, criminal offences 3,947, and in the area of misconduct, we had 4,488 complaints, which totaled 10,437 complaints. And in terms of the service delivery achievement, Chairperson, you will note that we attained in respect of registration and allocation of cases within the 48-hour period, which was the target time. We achieved a 98% in respect of the 6,377 cases. And in respect of completion of deaths in police custody as a result of police action, we attained a 73% target, which exceeded the 60% target which was set for the program. Similarly, in respect of completion of criminal offences, which target had was 50%, we attained a 78% in that area. And in respect of misconduct, there was also a 78% attainment in that regard. The next slide, Chairperson, slide 28, indicates basically the workload vis-a-vis the completion, cases completed, and as you can see, out of the 10,437 complaints, we completed 7,946 of them, which gives you an overall completion rate of 76% nationally. The next slide, Chairperson, it just talks specifically to the respect of class 1, which is death in police custody. As I indicated earlier, the attainment there was 73% overall in terms of the national achievement. Similarly, slide number 30, which is completion of criminal cases, you'll see that the target was met and exceeded at 78%, which represents a completion of 3,071 cases. And the department made a total recommendation of 526 criminal recommendations to the Director of Public Prosecution, which comprised 112 recommendations in respect of deaths in police custody as a result of police action, and 414 complaints of criminal offences. And we also made recommendations totaling 1,666 to SAPS management in respect of the various categories of classes that we have with the dead, VVA, criminal offences and misconduct. And if you go to slide number 33, chapter 10, you will note that we report in respect of the departmental convictions, which totaled 77, broken down to 5 dead, 2 DBA matters, 11 criminal offences and 59 cases of misconduct. Then in respect of convictions, criminal convictions, there were 48 attainments, 25 in respect of death and 23 in respect of other criminal offences. Slide 35, Chapter 10, talks to the closure of cases. You'll see that we closed 611 cases as substantiated. 5,427 complaints were closed as unsubstantiated. This is after cases have been investigated and found that there was really no basis for those particular complaints. And then 186 thereof were withdrawn, and a total number of 6,224 cases were then closed as a whole. While I've reflected in terms of the achievements that the program made in respect of the targets that it set out in the financial year, which I would also just want to repeat that certainly I think the program did very well. However, there were very few challenges which prompted us as a program to come up with action plans to ensure that we address those kind of challenges. Some of which are the huge workload that some of the provinces are carrying. And in those areas we put in place the Monitoring and Evaluation Committee, which is constantly monitoring the performance in terms of those particular provinces where challenges are being experienced. Similarly, we also put in respect of slide number 38, there were issues that were raised by the Auditor General, as indicated by the Executive Director, which issues then we had to address immediately, and some of which also we had to put in action plans in terms of how are we going to address those issues going forward. But I want to indicate especially in respect of in slide number 38, one of the issues that was raised was the non-compliance with the regulatory framework in terms of the use of percentages to report actual performance, which contravenes the framework set by the national trader. And in terms of what we've done, the remarks that you'll see, the remarks column, that the content has been addressed. The use of percentage was discussed with the National Treasury and the AG, hence the ENE chapter for the 2010-11 financial year reflects the use of both percentages and projected numbers. And again, here, the second one was the failure to provide revenue in areas where there was no attainment of targets in terms of our monthly, in terms of our quarterly, monthly and quarterly reports. This issue also has been addressed, and we do indicate, the provincial has to indicate if they have not been able to meet targets, and they also go on to indicate what actions are they going to put in place in order to ensure that they are going to meet targets in the following month. Similarly, you'll see in page 39, also other issues that were raised there have also been addressed. The final one being then the failure to develop an annual business plan, which will, as I indicated in the remarks column, that the first draft annual business plan will be developed in respect of the 2011-2012 financial year. Thank you, Chairman.
Chairperson, Program 3, Commissioner Hooley.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, good morning. I'm just going to take you through in terms of Program 3. I'll look at the introduction and the strategic objective and then performance information. The measurable objectives for Program 3 provide for the receipt of registration and processing of complaints, manage all information and knowledge needs, conduct proactive research, complete application for exemption in terms of the DVA within 30 days, audit at least 198 police stations per annum, and then lastly conduct at least 140 community awareness programs. The program has achieved almost all the targets, as you can see, successful. In the era of IT, which is information, communication, and technology, we've achieved the target.
on communication, again with activity target, and then on community outreach activities. The target for the period of 2009-10 was the 240 event, and we managed to do 386 outreach activities. And then on the area of research, again, we obtained the target where we're supposed to have conducted 3 research reports. And then with spacing audits, we've done 442 spacing audits, and the target was 1,098 spacing audits. Chatterton, I just wanted to give you an overview of the case type that we had for this year, and then we will also be comparing 2008 to 2009. Generally, if we can look at that table, there's been an increase. We had 4% increase, and also we had a decrease. As you can see that with death, we had 6% decrease, and also with DVA, we had 16% decrease. And then on the second slide, that shows you 9 provinces, including the satellite office of the ICD. And we received a total of 6,377 complaints during that period. This is from 1st of April 2009 up to March 2010. And then on the second slide, there will also give you a breakdown in terms of the claims. And if you look at those slides, you notice that Mpumalanga experienced a 47% increase in complaints, followed by the Western Cape with 26%, while Eastern Cape, KZN, and Northern Cape, they experienced a decrease, which is 26%, 12%, and 7% respectively. And then on the second slide, Jefferson, it does give you a slide in terms of death and the yearly change. As you can see, again, there's been a decrease when it comes to death in police custody, which is 2%. And again, on death as a result of police action, we also had a decrease there, which is 8% compared to 2008-2009. And then the last slide, It just gives you again an overall in terms of the increase. We had an increase again there. It gives you the death in police custody as a result of police action. As you can see, the chapter that KwaZulu-Natal, they had 31%, followed by Gauteng, which is 22%. But if you look at the Western Cape, they had 9%, and Eastern Cape at 10%. In most cases, Eastern Cape and Western Cape, they normally also had an increase, but this year, Mpumalanga, they met with Western Cape in terms of death in police custody and as a result of police action. And then this slide also gives you the injuries sustained in custody. We had an increase there to 35% in the sustained private custody, followed by the injuries sustained in custody, and then with natural causes, it was only 32%. And then this slide gives you the crime cases per province. The Mpumalanga again, it had 93 cases, but if you look at the Eastern Cape, there was a decrease of 27%, and again on the Northern Cape, there was also a decrease of 8%, and KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, they have the same, which was 15% respectively. Thank you, Chairperson. That was just an overview in terms of the statistics.
Thank you, Chairperson. The last speaker from our side is the Acting CFO, Mr. Beloit.
Thanks, Chairperson, honourable members. I have a few slides here that talk to the financial management of the department. The slide in the board there reflects the total appropriated amount for the department in this financial year, which was 116 million. And the third column there indicates the total expenditure out of that amount. The EDL already indicates, as I alluded to, we had an under expenditure of 10 million, 10.2 to be specific. And the reasons were because of the delayed relocation of the national office to the new offices, as well as the outstanding invoices from public works which were not submitted within the financial year. That is the reason we had that under expenditure of 10 million. The next slide, chapter 7, indicates the budget allocation per office, including affordability, where we had two in private, under the name of the province, is where we have got satellite offices. The total amount that has been expended there is 106 million, coming back to total budget of 116 on the first slide.
The two satellite offices, that's the provincial office plus the satellite office, or is it two satellite offices?
No, it's the provincial office
plus
another satellite office.
So you still only have one in the Bronx?
Yes, yes, yes. Still have one in those offices, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Thanks, Chester. In the next slide, indicates the method of emphasis that Chairperson has already alluded to. The AG and the issue with the basis of the accounting system that we're using is the modified case of accounting. But then our response to them is that this accounting system is determined by the national treasury. It's not only the ICT which is using this system. But the other issue that the AG had with us is the 40,000. Which was incurred due to improper procedures which were followed by certain officials when they traveled and then they came for accommodation. That full amount of 40,000 has been covered from the involved officials. And the other issue that the Director General had with us is the 145,810 amount which relates to the officials who acted longer than 6 and 12 months, as I indicated when I was giving a report on the program one. What happened then is that we were required as well to report this irregularity to the National Treasury, which we have done. And we have now implemented procedures, as I indicated, to ensure that this does not occur again. The next slide, Chapter 7, I hope to be. It will be useful to the committee as well to indicate the comparison between the allocation for the previous financial year and also the allocation for this financial year. We got an increase of about 15 million, 14.9 million from the previous financial budget, which is 116 million, sorry, to 181. But this 181 million is after the adjustment. And the following slide further indicates the allocation, the way we have allocated the budget in the next financial year per office. I want to go through each of the figure chapters. Thanks.
The Chairperson, in terms of time, that's our presentation.
Thank you very much, Executive Director, for the presentation. We are going to allow members to ask questions. And I'm just taking your annual report here, particularly on the depth of whoever was in the custody of the police custody. And if you check cases of the victims, it is 47% accounts for 26 to 35 years, followed by 19 to 25, 36 to 48. Victim classification, 90% will be suspect, 1% will be sentenced, 9% will be awaiting trial, and persons responsible for death, 62% are sub members, 14% natural causes, members of the public, 8%. Himself or co-detainees, 20% and 40%. places of death could be others, according to your report. The 58% will be at a crime scene, and then 21% clinic or hospital, 70% police cell, court cell, ambulance or transit, and sub the height of. And days of the week, you have all those days. And particularly on the days of the week, what does that mean to ICD, if I must really ask you? Because I'm trying to make sense out of this graph. For me, if say maybe it was talking to weekend or that during weekend and during the week and so on, probably trying to compare that, it could speak something, but I just want to ask as to what does this mean? What does this mean to ICD, but to all of us? What is it that we can conclude out of this graph, for instance? And these deaths are just about victims who only are in the police as of such, nothing in the prisons and so on. And I'm asking this question because you have natural deaths as well. You have for instance, sentenced. Are you talking about sentenced victims in the police cells? And where is this? I'm just asking, but let me allow number two questions. I just had this graph in front of me and wanted to ask as to what exactly does this mean, this graph mean to all of us? What can we conclude out of this graph? I'm taking hand, Honorable Kolaban, Honorable AG, Honorable Grace, Honorable Defreto, Honorable Greg, Honorable Swate, Honorable Annelies, Honorable Mochumi, Honorable Reverend Misho, in that order, please, if you remember. Number one.
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in the, you know, the problem with the issue of the vetting of your staff. It was a huge problem in the past. Can you just bring us up to date? And are you still battling with having the annual vetting certificates delivered on time and the vetting of the new members? I know that was a huge issue for you previously. And then looking to Program 2, what are the specific problems being experienced in Mpumalanga and the Western Cape in that those targets were not reached in relation to the completion of the death by SAPS members? Now, I see you've had to outsource investigative work in Mpumalanga. Is that working? Is that a way to go to ease the staff shortages there? Now, I see also referred to a huge workload in KZN. And I'm hoping the staffing issues there are now sorted out. Has Mr. John or has a person been appointed now full time? Or we still, yeah. I'm just interested in what's happening there. And then finally, in relation to deaths in police custody, certainly the chair referred to it a moment ago. But I'm just interested in the figures of those who actually die of an illness whilst in custody. We have, as a committee, seen, for example, someone with very late stages of TB simply put out in the courtyard and was just lying there and looked very near death. And I don't know that SAPS are actually taking it sufficiently seriously. They should be transporting, to my mind, that person straight to a hospital. And it seems inexplicable that these people are dying actually in police cells of an illness. Thank you.
Thanks, Professor. My question to Mr. Maloy is about the 19 members that went to that department for promotion. I want to know, don't you have your own promotion to retain your members? To Mr. Tshabalala, about the 55 members who completed the certificate program, how many of these 55 have you retained so far? And you made mention of 26 members that went for the basic crime investigation training that was offered by SAP. How many of these 26 do you still have? And you mentioned the 98 withdrawal. I want to know what led to this withdrawal. Why do you have withdrawal? To Mrs. Mbuli, you made mention of the injuries, and you said, I want to know what you mean by when you say the injury due to natural cause. What does that mean? Thanks, Chairman.
Chairman, thanks for the presentation, but it opens up a lot of questions to some of us that we don't understand what it is. I just wanted to check, Chairman, after you have also touched on the issue of people who die in police custody. According to the information that one has, is that when people get a little bit too sick, the correctional services always call the families, and that person is, you know, taken home. To these ones who are dying in police custody, what is it that they don't do? Because there are hospitals, there are doctors in prisons or wherever. What is it that they don't do up until a certain time in the hospital, according to investigation, as well as the people who die because of police action? What do they do to me so that I must, you know, die in police custody? Another question is, I heard you mentioning that you get information from the presidential hotline. How do you get it? Do they email, do they fax, do you go? And thereafter, what is it that you do with that information? Another question is around cases. I didn't understand which case is that. Page 28 of the same information of people who died in police custody, whereby other cases are withdrawn because of insufficient information, or page 35. I don't understand this column of death, but it says unsubstantiated withdrawn. What does that mean? I think it should be.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the presentation. You have listed high-profile families, cases, families, what came from Park, Red Ridge. Just want to check with you whether these are only high-profile cases. Because I think you visiting is very, very important. It would change the perception of the communities to the directorate. On target not met. I'm very much interested. You say you did not achieve 50% women in senior management position because there are no vacancies. I need to check with you now what is the present position, male as opposed to female. And you are saying the 31st of March 2011, which is almost 5 months from now, I need to check with you how are you going to achieve this. Because women are not objects. Or men are not objects also. How are you going to achieve this by the 31st of March 2011? I think you check.
Thanks for the ICD. I've got three questions here. The first relates to page 109 of your annual report. You indicate the number of cases that have been carried over from the previous financial year. If I'm not mistaken, looking at the annual report, in last year's annual report hearing as well, we had a similar situation where quite a high number of cases were carried over. And in particular, yeah, if I'm reading this correctly, 50% of the cases emanating from KwaZulu-Natal were carried over. I'd like to get some indication as to firstly, what would be the reason for the number of cases being carried over? Are there particular reasons, and why in particular with KZN 50% of cases carried over? We get some explanation about that, and then what are we putting in place to ensure a faster turnaround of the carryover of cases? And these cases carried over, are those simply from the previous financial year, or are they from years before that? If we can get an indication of that, see, that's my first question, Chair. My second question would be around the station audit. Your annual report on page 43 of this presentation today talks about the fact that there's 442 station audits that took place. I imagine that means the ICD in the past financial year met 442 stations. What I'd like to just find out is the cycle. So, for instance, we have X number of police stations in the country. In terms of the work plan of the ICD, have we determined that we would like to visit each police station in so many years? So, for instance, is it every 5 years? Is it every 10 years? Have we worked that out? Do we have a plan? How do we determine which police stations we visit in a given financial year? So, for instance, for next year's financial year, do we know which police stations we're going to visit? And when you visit a repeat visit, do you actually go back and look at the previous visit that took place and compare your reports? And then, once you visit a police station, how long does it take before you actually produce a report? And what happens to that report? Just my third question, Chair, relates to the Executive Director has mentioned a few times that he's been in office since August last year, if I heard correctly. Now, I'd like to get, if we could get some indication as to Executive Director is in office from August until March during the last financial year, and apparently since then. What impact have you and your team made since your appointment? And I think there's many number of members in your team are new as well. What impact have you made in improving the efficiency and effectiveness of the ICD? Thank you,
Chairperson. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Executive Director, for the presentation. My first question is with regard to the permanent appointment of the CEO. I've heard you saying that you still have a team CFO, so I just want to know when are you going to appoint the permanent CFO so that the organization could run smoothly. And the second one is with regard to the helpline that you also indicated that the people can complain on. So I just want to know how do you publicize that? The mechanism that you use for the public to know exactly what to do if they've got such a problem. And another one is with regard to details in terms of the findings of the Auditor General. Here it is mentioned that there was an amount of money which was not used properly and proper procedures was not followed. And it is also saying that the full amount was recovered from officials involved. So I just want to know, and then after you actually recovered that money, what have you done? What action have you taken against those people who actually didn't do their work properly? I think they're all for now.
Two with the limitations and three questions. I will do that, but I've got some more when you give us a second round. I would like to start off on page 15 of the annual report. There's a statement made there that I would like either the executive director or the program one, Mr. Barlowe, to explain to me. It says that including the policy formulation responsibilities of the executive director and top management. I don't quite understand. It's under measurable objectives. The second paragraph under measurable objectives. I don't quite understand that statement, and I would like just some enlightenment on what it actually means, because in my mind the minister determines policy and department executes. So can we just get some clarity on that? Then, Chairperson, I want to move over to page 16 for my next question. 16, 17, 18, all related to the same question, 19, 20 and 21, all of them for the same question. I do not think that the actual achievements against the standards are reflecting in terms of measurable objectives. I mean, you cannot say family is conducted immediately and on an ongoing conversion, a written confirmation in docket, production of preliminary report within 180 days, and then you refer to your referral of 48 hours in your actual achievement. The actual achievement is the 48 hours when you assign a case to somebody. Production of preliminary report within 180 days is something completely different. And I do not understand how that came about. The actual achievement does not speak to the standard of service. In many of the actual achievements, it just says what it should be. It's not saying what was actually achieved. Quality and thorough investigation of docket sent to the DPP, SAPS, MPA. Queries to send it to promptly docket forward to the DPP within 30 days. Within 30 days of what? It doesn't say to us what the percentage of what's actually achieved there. Response to service delivery complaints, then you set actual achievement, response query within 7 days. That is what you want to achieve, but what did you achieve? That is what we need to know here. So for me, that all those pages, I've got that same refrain concern over and over again. Table 1.5, complaint mechanism. Consulting at actual achievement, consulting at ICD office, prompt attendance. Doesn't say what it should be. It's not measurable. And I think the Auditor General also makes reference to the fact that your objectives are not measurable. And I just want some clarity on that, paper person. Then page 22, and that would be my last question for this round. I would like to know. That Honourable Willibati is laughing at me. Can you explain the high overtime cost at Administration Program 1? Now, overtime in the ICD is in essence meant for your investigators. So I'm very interested in why there's such a high overtime cost for Administration in program one.
Thanks. Can I please? Thanks, Chairperson, and let me thank the Directorate for the presentation. I'm not going to refer, I'm referring my questions to the Directorate. My first question is on page 13. On page 13, the Directorate indicated that out of 48 cases of death, 25 were in relation to death in police custody as a result of police action, and 23 convictions related to other criminal offences. So I'd like to know, what are these criminal offences that are being referred to here? Because I don't want to leave those houses as subjects, so maybe they refer to them. So I want clarity on that. The other one is with regard to death, the two people who died, that is on page 75, death as a result of poisoning. What I'd like to find out, these people died of them having poisoned themselves, if that's the reason why these people died. I'd like to know, how did they access whatever poison that they used to poison themselves? And if it's a result of the police, then also how and why did it happen? The other one is with regard to about 112 people who died because of firearm handling negligence. I'd like to find out how that happened, because I believe that 212 people died because of that is quite a big, a huge number. And pardon my, I request that the director pardon my ignorance, but I tried to browse through the annual report. And I believe the annual report gives the achievements, the successes of what the directorate or whatever department have achieved, and the challenges that maybe they came across that hindered them in achieving certain objectives. But as I quickly browsed through the report, I missed the challenges, but except the recommendations that I found on page. Does this suggest that the department has so good that it doesn't come across challenges and even have a mechanism or strategies on how to address those challenges that they come across? I'm not sure whether I came to three, because I wanted to confine myself to three, but let me go to the last one. The last one is with regard to the disabled. I believe that the directory doesn't need to deal with that technical work that they have to run, jump, or do whatever. But the one and two disabled people that get employed, what's the difficulty of the directorate getting disabled people? Because I believe that we have very capable disabled people. Very. I saw that that deal with a legislative matter, that we have very good ones that deal with legislative. The last and last 10% is with regard to the 50%. The presenter indicated, I heard that had been mentioned, but the presenter indicated that it's an ongoing process. And if it's an ongoing process, it can take another decade for it to be achieved. What is the actual date? And lastly, as you indicated, that there hasn't been opportunities, or there haven't been opportunities to employ females. Does it suggest that since the financial year 2008-2009, there hasn't been any employment in the sector. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to slide 15, housing has the highest staff component and no other staff office staff. Nothing is given about staff on the ground, particularly investigators. Now, I'm interested in that because housing has the lowest percentage of cases that are completed. Now, could the reason be because of shortage of staff or because of misconduct? Because housing happens to have a high case of misconduct and also the second highest cases of criminal offense. Are these cases of misconduct and criminal offense impacting on the work they do, or what, why are they completing fewer cases than other policies? The second question, according to the performance information slide, almost 50% of criminal offenses, and for that matter, substantially, criminal offenses have been withdrawn. I would understand if they would withdraw cases that are unsubstantiated, but they say it is substantiated criminal offenses. Now, I want to know who withdraws them and for what reason, because they are substantiated, and do you consider the seriousness of the cases before you withdraw almost 50% of them? And my third question has to do with the 6,377 complaints that were received. 526 of them were recommendations were made to the DPP, and 1,060 recommendations were made to such management, which leaves us with more than 4,000 cases. Now, nothing said about those complaints. I want to know whether this more than 4,000 that has not been referred have been frivolous, or was there insufficient evidence? Why is so much, so many cases just almost like just disappeared? We don't hear anything about it. What has happened to them? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, members. Mr. Vandoy, Mr. Shabala, Mr. Mbuti, what is your role in the compilation of the annual report? What is your role? And I'm asking this question because I believe your annual report is of very low quality and very difficult to interact with, even as you try to calm down and be very objective, but you end up not able to read and understand the focus of your report. And I want to know from yourself, as head of this program, as to what role do you play when ultimately we have a report that leaves your organization being just like this. And secondly, you are referring to on page 15 of the report to your measurable objective of the program administration is to provide for the overall management and organization of the ICD. And I sit here being a member of parliament and expected to play an oversight role on you based on this measurable objective. And can you tell me as to how measurable is this objective? I want us to go to page 23, maybe, of the report. On the employment and vacancies program,
vacancy rate, according to this calculation, is 6.9. I tried to make the calculation myself and I'm still not able to come to that figure. And I wonder if you can explain as to where does this figure come from, how did you calculate it? I'm not suggesting that it is not correct, but personally, I just can't come to that figure even when I try to calculate this figure. Page 28 of your report. In fact, page 24 of your report, you have your critical occupation, table 3.3. I really want to know whether you need this. And if you don't, why are you reporting on this critical occupation? I would not want to talk about many of the others that remain blank, but one will actually be interested to know as to why do you continue to report on something that you do not need as a directorate. Your page 28, it talks about skilled agriculture and fishery workers. Do you need these occupations? I just want to know. And if you don't need, because you actually are misleading us, you make us to think that it's occupations that you need, but they are not there. And to us, that might actually say that is why the executive maybe is not functioning effectively, because they need these skills that they are not there. And can you tell us as to whether you need these skills? And going to page 51, don't worry, I'm the chairperson, I can update my power. On page 61, paragraph 2 under regulatory measures, you're saying there were 655 incidents of escape recorded during the 2008-2009. And the question is, why are you reporting on 2008-2009 instead of 2009-2010? Because I think this report is about 2009-2010 and not 2008-2009. And why are you reporting suddenly on 2008-2009? And therefore, what are the figures for 2009-2010 which we need in this report? And those figures, how are they spread in provinces? That's 2,655, if indeed it is 2009-2010. And maybe my last question for now, because I think I have quite a number of them. It's on paragraph, it's on page 52 of the report. Very serious issues that you are raising on those three paragraphs. The station commanders have failed in their responsibilities to institute disciplinary action in all incidents of escape. And one really is interested to know, because one will want to actually check disciplinary actions that were taken by staff vis-a-vis this important issue that you are raising here. According to SAP's report, there were about 4,136 cases of discipline that were processed during the financial year in question. And one will want to ask as to whether these 4,136 reported by SAP exclude this, because they're saying they were not instituted, because that will actually mean that SAP is not disciplining its members. But this goes down to due to certain members being lax in their approach, it was found that suspects returning from court appearance were either not body searched at all or not properly searched before being detained in the holding cells again. And one will be interested to know as to whether this is found in all prisons. Is it a generalized thing or it is in specific prisons? And indeed, if you've raised this matter with the Department of Police, and if you've been getting any feedback from them, because this is quite important, it's a very serious issue. And the last one which you're reporting just there is the fact that suspects arrested with injuries are normally not profiled by having their fingerprints taken, with the result that should they escape or receive medical attention in hospital, there is no record of their identity. This also is quite serious. And it actually takes the work off police quite, because it means they will arrest the person today, maybe because he's injured, he's taken to hospital, fingerprints are not taken immediately, and if they escape, it's there to square one again. And one is interested to know as to whether this is generalized. Can we therefore conclude that in all the prisons that, I mean, police stations that you visited, this was the case, so that we can actually be able to interact with the department on these important issues that you are raising in these three paragraphs. For now, those will be my questions, and I will allow members, because now it's 10 to 11, and I think there is tea or what else out there. Yes, there's tea. To grab a cup of tea, all of us, and at 11, the directorate will respond to questions.
Thank you. comment. You can say that again.
Okay, we have to start now. We are going to allow the directorate to respond to our questions. But I will request that maybe even before we respond to other questions, we allow the four or three members to respond to the questions. What is your role in the compilation of this report? And maybe when after you've done that, maybe even before you answer the question, we'll also ask the executive director to explain to the portfolio committee as to what process do you follow in the compilation of the report up until the search in Parliament. Hello.
Thank you, Chairperson, all the members. My role as a program manager in the completion of the annual report is that of collecting information from different units. As I've indicated, my program consists of those units that I've indicated, about 9 or 10, how many. So, because Program 1 is highly regulated in terms of the kind of information which must go into the annual report. If you look at the public presentation, Part 3, Chapter 3, it lists all the tables that are in here that prescribe the kind of information must go in there. Your listing, or whatever things that are in there, and some of the issues that they have been raising, I'll come to them when I respond to them. These are tables which are determined by DPSA. Look at any another from the planning department, these changes are there. So my role will be, for instance, to say to HRM, by this particular date, I need information consolidated. They send information to me. So that's the validation, all the units that report to me. And then I sit down with the head of those companies to say, this information, verify the information before the information goes to the EDS office. The EDS got the change of that commission that looks into the report. And then we consolidate that information and send it through to the AD. Well, through Program 3, because Program 3 are the people who are actually going with the information. I do have control on that information that must go into the annual report. That is basically my role. And then we meet as leadership abilities for management every time when there is a draft, the first draft, second draft, and then the AD will say, look into your draft. Is there anything that is correct, or is there anything that you need to amend? They also give you input to say, I'm able to do this. And then, as a program manager, I need to amend that information. Now, the information that also is actually also contributes sometimes to the not late finalization, but it is the issue of the financial statement and also the information that comes into the table from the entire end, because you can only get that information after the close of the financial year. You can't get information before the UCAR. So you have to wait until the financial year is closed, then bring the ELA programs, then give you the information and then you consolidate the information. So that is basically the role. And then the same form will take part definitely of the financial aspect, financial part that goes into the report. But the role of the project manager is that of consolidation, and also part of control of the information which is going to the annual report. In short, that is.
But let me inform you that there is nothing in this annual report that talks about fisheries, machine assemblers, and so on and so forth, because it's not relevant for SAP to have mentioned their annual report. Those guidelines are actually assisting SAP to compile a report that talks to those things that are relevant to SAP.
we should expect ICG to do. So there's nothing in this report. Even the tables that are here, it's such a very big organization compared to ICD. But I can tell you, if we were to count your tables, there are more than the tables in this sub-report. But whereas if you're going to each program, they are far less because they choose and they're able to combine information so that it makes sense. I think that can only serve as a guideline, but I can't understand why would a manager write a report like this. And that is why I'm asking, that after you have produced this report, do you sit down and look into the quality of the report, but you have access to other department reports? I mean, why not compare your report to other reports that you have? I'm asking, Honorable Chairman, Mr. Chabala.
Thank you, Chair. My own big challenge as a program manager, chairperson, is to receive the information from responsibility managers, that is heads of provinces, with regards to program two responsibilities, and then consolidate the information, after which then, unlike program one, my program is not regulated in terms of the particular format that I'm supposed to be following. Now, in the past, there is a particular, there is a certain format which we have been sticking to, one of which has been the fact that we reflect, for instance, on the high-profile cases, you know, which we call it the case digest. Here we reflect on some of the cases that have been in that particular financial year that were high-profile, either received media attention and so forth. And after which then we also then do a verification together with the police, especially with regard to class one, that is the death in police custody and the result of police action. There is a committee that comprises of the ICD members and such members, basically where we exchange information in terms of ensuring that there isn't cases of death of class one which have not been accounted to in terms of the two organizations. So I mean, that's, I'm trying to reflect now in terms of the one of the delays that occasioned the issue of time and finalization of information. But also, Chairperson, one of my roles as well at the end is to do a verification of information and then quality control then the information before it is then finally published. And again, I sit in the, as Mr. Polo has indicated, as program managers, then we come together and do the final consolidation, which will then go into various stages of the draft, which will also again do the editing and make inputs until the final product is made. Thank you.
Thanks, Captain. The process is basically the same as program two manager. What I do as a program manager, we collect information from the provinces, we verify the statistics, and when it comes to class one, as Mr. Chabala indicated, we normally liaise with the police so that we can verify class one cases. And then we also send the first draft back to the provinces so that they can also verify whether the information that they forwarded to us is the truth of what is happening in their provinces. And then we combine again a report. This is the second draft. And on the third draft, that's where we sort of compare the performance in terms of maybe the previous financial year and the current financial year. And then we also try to do quality control on all the statistics. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If I was responsible for higher review, I would have fired all of you with immediate effect and deal with the consequences of that afterwards. Because I cannot understand that after three attempts to check, to verify as to whether the report is correct, we still have something in the report research indicate a production of qualitative reports containing recommendations. Production of qualitative reports containing recommendations. I mean, report. And how is this regarded as research? I mean, the reports that you write, you regard them as research. I'm really asking. And then, if indeed we must agree that that is what is called research, then we go to your recommendations. They are not indicating that there was ever any research conducted. Ever. Just to go and ask, go to the nearest hospital and ask questions. Three times, sitting down, looking into this, so that ultimately produce this report. Fortunately, I'm not responsible for hiring you, but really, this, for me, this is one important document that you produced to me. One important document that talks to what you are doing in the ICD. That's quality. I don't know whether after we met, you did go back to this report and check whether really it has been fine as members of parliament. Mind you, Mr. Chairperson, whether you think we're just being fine. But really, reread this report. Even when you try to reread it, it embarrasses you.
Well, we said two things that I think is the crux of the problem as well. And I don't understand where this new approach comes from, because you've never done it this way. Yes, it's true that the PFMA requires us to put certain things in, but as Henderson said, we don't have fisheries and agriculture, heavy vehicle, whatever the case may be, you don't have to put them in. The second issue is that where you put in those tables are normally at the back of your report. And it's not supposed to be the body of your report. Now the narrative, especially in Programme 1, is non-existent. There's no narrative in Programme 1. There's no explanation of, I think one of the members referred to the challenges, what they have achieved, etc. There's nothing in there. The second thing is Mr. Baloyi said, the problem for the lateness, no, let's not, you know, refer to lateness. Yes, this report was late. Let's acknowledge it. It was late. Unacceptable, it was late. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Baloyi, you refer to the fact that you have to wait for the end of the financial year. The end of the financial year is March of every year. From March to September, you have time to compile this report. So in both cases, I think it's just, see, that to me is two of the issues. There's no narrative explaining. The tables that are there, even those that are not supposed to be there, are in the wrong place in the report. And then the issue of time. There's no, every other department, some million times bigger than yours, have the same timeline as you have.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we acknowledge that the current system is not working. I think the editorial committee who ran the current product deliver a great product. And how do we address it moving forward? I mean, that is the big issue. To indicate one, we have appointed somebody from outside to look at the old timeline, the errors that came in, the quality of the information, to look at that. Because at the end of the day, it's very important that those information that comes in the final report should be qualitative and in terms of quality be correct. So we will definitely do that analysis, revisit then the editorial committee approach, and ensure that it's done right and correctly. That is all you can say.
Chairperson, if I listen to the ED, is that a promise for the next report or what? Because I don't understand what he's saying in a proper layman's language. Is that a promise that what has been said by the chairperson and the other speakers would be the improvement of the report next year, or is that a different thing?
I just want to press this now.
Who's the editorial committee? And secondly, I don't think appointing somebody from outside is what she does. Surely you can't have a consultant doing what your department and your head of your department should be doing. I mean, if the problem is within the department, address it. We can't outsource what is the most important document of the year to an outside consultant. It's just not done.
Yeah, Chair, maybe just to clarify what I said. I think going forward, the next product must be absolutely 100% correct. There can be no excuses. And I mean, that should be the approach, in line with what the Chairperson indicated. Maybe with regard to what Ms. Van Wyk indicated, what I'm saying about the current process, what I'm saying, I was given wrong information. My view is, as the accounting officer, I must give right information. So I've appointed somebody from outside to come in, look at the timelines, where did the mistakes come in, so that we can rectify those processes. That's the only way to ensure that the milestones in future are correct. That's the only
way. I think Jefferson must look at the subject, because we are getting deeper and deeper. He can't say that you are given a wrong information, because the question will be, what happened then? And then whose consequences there are? You see, I think let us close this chapter, and maybe let's carry on and answer the question. Because we are going deeper and deeper in this thing, and it will put us in a very awkward position.
And you've not told us as to who is the editorial committee. Honorable Motion.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not too serious to what is being discussed here. I just want to put something on my question so that I get a proper response to this question. It is actually a mixed with the question. The 112 relates to suicide, but not due to negligence of fire and injury. But I believe that also on the 25th, that was the result of firearm. I need to send this firearm and it will be responded to.
I think she's just correcting the question, but I think we have to finalize this before we move on to questions, all of them, as we are timing up.
Thank you, Chair. The editorial committee consists of representatives from different programs. We have representatives from program one, from finance, Mr. Tenenberg, Mr. Mudau from program three, myself from program three, Ms. Mulashe from the provinces, Ms. Tugela from Program 2. Yeah, those are the members.
So the heads of programs are not part of the editorial committee. That's what you're saying.
Yes,
sir. And why is not? Why is not? I have information for 2008-2009 in the report. It is in this report, and as a person, I'm expecting the aid of the of the program to account to the portfolio committee. So why do you report about the other financial year and not the financial year in question? And who do I go to the editorial committee, or I go to the head of the program? And what is their role in this editorial committee? And when we have a report like this one, really, the report that we have here today, who should take the accountability? Is it the editorial committee? Is it the head of programs? Is it who? What do you have an editorial committee that compiles an important document like this? That goes out to people. I mean, really, if I'm a member of parliament and I'm dealing with ICD every day and probably informed about what you're supposed to be doing, but I'm not able really to get information from this document. What about somebody who is trying to get to know as to what ICD is all about? I'm telling you, I'm saying this, I've tried to read this document, I don't know how many times, I can't make sense out of it. It doesn't make any sense. It really does not make any sense, except for these many drawings that are empty. What, when you talk about SIVN, I've never seen something, you know, like really, I'm saying, I've never seen a report reporting on an important issue such as that one, being like it is in this report. Do you have a person, designated person responsible for HIV/AIDS? Yes. It's the Chief Kunga, I mean, really, report. Like that. But let me allow you to respond to questions. I think it's quite important for us to get to know as to who and who are the people that are responsible for this work. And one will really be interested to know as to what is going to happen. After we have asked these questions and we are expressing our extreme disappointment as the portfolio committee, what are you doing about it as the directorate? Is it one other meeting that said and the members of parliament ask questions because they have got to ask, express their dissatisfaction and finally going back business as usual? Let me allow you to ask to respond to questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will immediately go through some of the questions that was raised by the members. Ms. Carla Barnard referred to the question of vetting of new members. As indicated earlier, it's still a problem, but I'm going to be busy now with a memorandum of understanding with NIA to see how we can improve that, and hopefully it will be in a better situation next year. Then regarding the staffing in KZN, you've asked regarding Mr. John. Maybe just to indicate, we recently appointed Mr. Kuba from Google to act there as acting head, but the lady who was on suspension, Ms. Khalil's suspension has been uplifted, so she's back at KZN. And of course, I mean, it's important for us to have a stable leadership in the province, and I think Mr. Schneeman also referred to it in his question regarding the numbers of cases that the backlogs in that province, especially the class 1s, because there's a huge number of class 1s, and remember, a lot of those are court cases, so our members who are doing investigations are involved in those matters. So that is part of the problem. I think going forward again, we will have to look as well at the staff members of that province. Then I just want to go here to the high profile cases. Mr. Lakoto raised that. I think it's a very important principle, and that's part of the investigator's duties, that they must at the all times, in all cases, especially class 1, family liaison officers appointed by those provincial officers. So in all those cases, there is family liaison officers, and they must liaise with the family to ensure that there is feedback on progress and so on, and I think it's very important as we move forward as well that we give that support to the families. So in all those cases, not necessarily ICO for, but in all class 1 cases, our investigators got a duty to keep contact with the family and be there. With regard to the 50%, I think much of the members raised the question of gender, and I think that is one issue we've already indicated during the ICO process as well. In terms of the IPED process, the levels of your provincial heads will be at chief director level. And that will enable the department that to ensure that at least 50% of those appointments will be, in terms of gender, female. So I think that is a very important tool that if we say it's about timelines, we're talking about next year. Maybe just to indicate what we've done in the last few months, as indicated earlier this morning. Our senior manager, human resources, was previously a man, it's now been replaced by a lady. Our head of security, the upgraded post, we've appointed a lady. We're going to appoint very soon a parliamentary liaison officer for the first time in the history of ICD, that will also be a lady. So I think our approach is really to, in those important positions, to give them the necessary scope. So the SMS members definitely next year will be on the horizon. Then Mr. Marty raised the matter of the acting CFO. That's been a concern for us. We've in June, July, we've made an appointment, but we couldn't offer the, well, maybe in terms of salary, so the lady declined. We again went through the process, and the new CFO will start on the 22nd of this month. So we're quite confident that that will also assist us in ensuring moving forward. In terms of the helpline, I think in terms of ethics, is an internal line to the employees of the department. So if there is, for instance, problems that they can then report it to the ethics officers to complain about certain procedures and proper procedures. So that's quite important to note. I think Ms. Van Wyk raised the question of the matter on page 15. She mentioned the question of policy formulation as abilities of the executive director and top management. Maybe just to indicate it's not quality with a capital, it's quality with a small letter in terms of internal policies of the department. For example, we've got policies on transport, we've got policies on leave, on standby duties. There's about 30, 40 policies in the department. So the updating of those policies, the improvement of those policies is part of the mandate of the top management. So that's not from a political perspective, it's in internal policies that we deal with in terms of that. Then in terms of, I think Mr. Beloy can refer to that matter. In terms of the quality of the annual report, I think we've referred to that as well in terms of responses. And then the one honourable member said, well, we're not raising challenges. And I think maybe to be very direct, and we've indicated that as well in the overview by the executive director, the 5 points there, and we've also indicated that to the portfolio committee when we met in January, there is indeed a lot of challenges in the department from a historic perspective. We've indicated to the portfolio committee we should strengthen head office, we should strengthen finance. This department has been without a director of finance for the last 10 years. So we've got that approval from the minister and the treasury to go ahead and appoint also a director of finance, and I think it's very positive. Internal audit, we do not have enough people to deal with our internal audit function. That's also recognized by the AG, and I think that's one of the issues we're going to address going forward. Investigation, we've also indicated that we, in terms of quality control, compliance, we need also improvement there. We've also indicated the executive director's office. Currently, there's no corporate governance unit in the department, like other departments, where quality control can be undertaken, your M&E function is situated. So going forward, improving the products of the department, there should be a corporate governance unit dealing with M&E, dealing also with the question of ethics. So that's going to be very important. We've indicated also in February the question of corruption, maladministration. We've taken disciplinary steps against those official with regard to the travel claims, we've indicated that. The qualified audit was a major problem. Mr. Schneeman referred to what would be major achievements. We think it's very important for the department to move to a situation after 5 years to an unqualified audit. That's very important because that's the building block to the next step, and that is to have a clean audit. So that's going to be vital. Then the quality of internal and external products should be improved. That we said in February, and I think it's still a major challenge that's been indicated by the chair as well today. So that's also an issue we'll have to. And then the question of strengthening of senior and provincial management. We've put it on the table, and I'm also putting it on the table today. Going forward, the only way we're going to be effective, especially with the new mandate, is to ensure that we've got the expertise, the technical knowledge in the key positions. And that's going to be financial, internal audit, as well as the performance in program 2. So, Chair, I just wanted to maybe give the other colleagues also an opportunity.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The one person was the national member who went to other government departments. The question was whether we as a department has our own internal promotion policy. Yes, the person is here, so we have our own internal promotion policy. But then the problem is that you can only promote the person as and when we have a vacant post. So that is the problem. We have an internal promotion policy, but
if you don't have vacancies, people just apply in other government departments and they get promotions. So that is how they leave the department. Some of them just leave only for 1 month. A person is earning 100 rand, the other department is offering that person 120 rand or something, to give an example. So they just leave. If we don't have that additional amount to give the person to the 10%, they just leave. But the promotion policy in that department is there. And the promotion policy says we need to give preference to our internal candidates, which we have done. I mean, a lot of people have been promoted from within. But then still, if we don't have a post, people will just leave. The next question is about the present situation regarding the senior representation in the department. Currently, we are at 35%, and we need to get to 50%. I think the idea is also cover the other part of the rest of the question by indicating the plans that we have in terms of how we're going to come to 50% going forward. The other question is, high overtime costs for inflation in program 1. Why do we have high overtime costs in program 1? And I remember this is, you know, it's an ongoing question. What happens is that the overtime in program 1 usually happens towards the end of the financial year. And it's always carried out by HR, members, management, and finance towards the close of the book. And also now of late, and also SCM, the supply chain management, the procurement unit, as they just indicated in the morning, all these years that we've been receiving qualified audit reports, it was in the area of asset management. So what we had to do in last year was just to put up a task team to the provincial offices, also here at national office, to update the asset registers, to do physical count of stock, and that kind of an activity could also only be achieved by putting in more hours by staff members. And finance, for instance, as I speak now, the situation that we're in now is uncomfortable, also lead to finance having to perform overtime. Because out of the 11 staff members in finance, we only have 4 now, 7 have left. Promotions and whatever. So, with 4 members in finance, it becomes very difficult to cope with your day-to-day activities. We've relocated a new building now during the last month, and then our transfer system, which included us, were off for about 2 weeks. Now, what does it mean? It means then that invoices have not been paid in that period, supplies have not been paid. So, when we started, when we started to be connected again, we had to keep up in terms of trying to pay up these invoices. That also forces your finance unit to actually work overtime as well as the other units in the department. The other person refers to the issue of disabled persons. What is the difficulty of the department to get disabled applicants? Yeah, what we've done now, when we advertise positions, we indicate that our posts are disabled. The person's saying people must apply. People are living with disabilities. In some instances, you do get applications, sometimes you don't get applications. For instance, in Falcon, they had advertised a position specifically aimed at targeting people with disabilities, but they didn't get anything. But then what we've done now, we're bringing up in the Department of Labor. We got to know that in the Department of Labor, you can access that database. So what we're doing now, when we have vacancies, we also posted vacancies to the Department of Labor and other institutions where we can get the applications. Last week, I was in Bethlehem, managed to get one disabled person. So we're making headway in that area as well. The issue of 50% women, the idea is allocated to that, but what I want to also indicate here, because part of the question was that it means that since 2008, there were no vacancies in which could be filled by female persons.
I think the issue here is that it's not just vacancies, but it's vacancies at senior level, because that is what the issue is here, 50% level. So we're talking about director upwards. So the answer is yes. The only vacant position at senior level that we have now since 2008, that was the ED, and also the one that the ED has referred to of human resource management, where it was filled by a male employee. Now we have employed a female employee at that level. How measurable is the objective? That's for the one. The chairperson was referring to the measurable objective for the one there, which sounds very broad. Yeah, the objective of the program is to provide for the overall management and organization of the ICT. The idea is partly said to that, but then in terms of measurability, program one's responsibility is to ensure that the department complies. Because program one is largely about compliance with the national security, with your policies, your PFMA, and those sort of things. And the development of internal policies as the EDF indicated. Now the visibility of that should be tested by asking a question. To what extent do you comply with national policies? To what extent do you comply with your PFMA? To what extent are you able to develop the policies which are prescribed that you must have? That is the overall management of the department. And to also to the extent to which your leadership is actually leading the department. So that is what the objective is all about. How do you come to 6.9% vacancy rate on page 23? The chairperson wanted clarification on this one. The 6.9 come as a result of the following procedure. I don't know if the chairperson can go to. I just want to just put figures there on page 23. Under the postal there, the number of posts were 287. That is the number of applicants posts in this financial year were 287. And as at the end of the financial year, when you compare the report, only 267 of those posts were filled. That's what we mean by number of employees in the position. Now, that leaves out 20 vacant positions. So, it is those 20 vacant positions which will give you 6.9% if we say 20 over 287 times by 100, then it gives you 6.9%. If the vacancy rate at the end of the financial year, we had 20 vacant positions. That's how we come to the. And I must acknowledge, I think what Honorable Alimis has indicated, the issue of the narrative. Is where it can come in that to indicate how you come to that event. We're going to take it, we're going to take the narrative there to explain the procedure that, that we do there.
Okay. Well, how I was actually calculating that I was basing this 8.8, 3.9, and 13%.
No.
And it was not giving me that, but even if I divided it by 3, it was still not giving me that. And if that's not related to those figures above, to those 8.8, 3.9, 13%,
no,
not related.
No, that is related, 8%, because those different factors relate to different number of positions. That was the same, so you can come to the same. For instance, the factors rate of 8.8 comes as a result of related to the 91 as against the 83 there, so we don't add that. We don't add that.
Sir, if I may assist with some of the statistical questions. The first question I think is the desk days of the week, which is on page 81, or rather 82. The chairperson, the statistical indication of when
the death as a result of police action happened. If you look at the narrative, there it indicates, it says, figure 12 indicates that most incidents where members use their service firearm resulting in death occurred on Monday, with 44 incidents reported, followed by Friday and Sunday. If you time relate it to table 11 on page 27, you will see what we are talking about there. 46% of the death as a result of police action happened during the course of arrest. In other words, they happened at the scene. If you look at the suspect died during the course of crime, with that 22%, you will also see that this happened at the scene. If you basically, this tries to break down further what has been reflected in the earlier pages in terms of the death and the circumstances under which they occur. If I may take the question relating to whether the circumstances specifically talk about them, if you look at page 76 and page 77 of the annual report, you will see that on page 77, the circumstances have mentioned the 46% during the course of arrest, 22% during the course of a crime. You will see that other deaths, for instance, are during the course of an escape, it's 4%. When you, out of the 860 deaths, 566 were deaths as a result of police action. And of that 860, 294, from page 76, table 9, were deaths due or deaths in police custody. And of the 294 deaths in police custody, 35% were injuries sustained prior to custody. For instance, when people are arrested by a police officer, or they are arrested by members of the community and assaulted there, and then the police come and they take them into custody and don't get the medical attention, or on their way to hospital then somebody ends up dying. And then you have injuries sustained in custody. These are both due to other inmates assaulting these victims, and also in some cases the police officers themselves assaulting the detainees in custody. And then you have natural causes. Now, these cases are where somebody may be ill and being taken into custody, and it's not apparent to the police that this person is suffering from something, and they end up dying. In fact, all these deaths, or most of them at least, post-mortems are conducted, and the medical professionals are the ones who actually say this is the cause of death. The ICD attends the scene if there's a death, and they also attend the post-mortem. And if it's a shooting, they will also try and get the doctor to see where the bullet is lodged, if there is any bullet and so on, and determine the cause of death. And then the issue, they certify that this death is actually caused by natural causes or whatever the cause may be. We've had instances where, for instance, a person is arrested and shot by the police. And then arrested them, they actually die of pneumonia and not the injury that resulting from the shooting that they suffered. So these are the circumstances under which this occurred. In terms of the police regulations, people are supposed to get medical attention, and in many instances they do. That is why you have those specified in page 80. And on page 81, you had 21% of deaths occurring in hospital or in the clinic, because the police actually did try to get the suspect or the victim the medical attention. But most of them, if you look at figure 11 on page 81, they happen at the scene. That is where most of the 58% occur. With regard to, as I've addressed the one on injuries in custody due to assault in many instances from either inmates or the police officers themselves, we had a case recently where this person was assaulted by the police and was taken into custody, they said, and then he died. They said he was assaulted by other inmates with a bar of soap. But investigation showed that that was not the case. It was assaulted by the police in KZN. The police have actually been found guilty in the court. Then we have also explained the circumstances under which the death due to police action occurred. The last one, Chair, relates to the cases that are carried over from the period prior to the reporting period. The question was, what could be the reason, especially with regard to KwaZulu-Natal? Now, I want to refer again.
Can I just come in there, because I think you're moving on to the next question. You know, you're talking about natural causes of death, and that being the responsibility of the medical officer, the doctor, to pronounce. We can fully agree with you. And I can imagine, as the ICD, you would be interested to know even as to why a person with pneumonia died simply because he's in custody, you know. Is it because he was delayed in seeking medical aid? I would imagine that would be your responsibility as ICD. That would be the information that you're interested in as the portfolio committee, so that we can actually ask the department as to why people who are medically ill are not taken to hospitals or clinics for them to get treatment on time. Because it doesn't matter whether it's the cause of death is pneumonia or it is TB or anything else for that matter. It's not given that the person therefore should be died. And what then are the circumstances that surrounded that natural death? I think it would be the interest of ICD. It is our interest as members of parliament. Because indeed, I would not just accept the fact that any person who is asthmatic, immediately he is arrested, therefore he must die. But asthma can kill. But it will kill because somebody is not getting the treatment of asthma. And it will be natural cause. It will be asthma. But what are the circumstances that surrounded that death? That is what we're not getting. And really, I'm still sitting here, not understanding as to what can I conclude out of this graph that says Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so many deaths. Because in my own view, I would have wanted something that says to me, maybe these deaths on these days are associated with one, or over weekends, these deaths are associated with the number of people that are there, or during the week because, or end of the month because crime is high and so on and so forth. And because for me right now, this is just worse because it's you can't find any difference between the Mondays or the Wednesdays, Saturdays. So for me, they mean it's a graph, but I can't find any information that I can deduce from that graph. And that is why we are asking. And I'm asking this question because I think this is one important aspect of ICD work. Death in custody. And even with our new bill, we've put a lot of emphasis on that one, on ICD.
And if we have graphs that are not telling us any information, but even yourself, you are still not giving us relevant information that can actually prepare you and sharpen you to do your work even better and to take these cases up, then I'm getting worried. And that is why really I'm asking about this graph. Because for now, they're not telling me any information, and even from your response, you know, on Monday, it's 20% deficit day of the week. And on Thursday it's 11%. What does that mean? That's different. What does it mean to you as you put this graph in this report? It's 15% on Sunday, 13% on Saturday, 15% on Friday. And what does this mean? Because surely this graph must tell us something. It's part of the critical work as ICD. And that is why I'm asking this question.
Last one, short question, noted. Last one relates to the cases carried over and what could be the reason, especially in KZN. If you look at in the annual report on page 74, you will see that KwaZulu-Natal accounted for the highest intake, 270, and that is 31%. If you go further on page 77 in the table 12, you'll also see the various causes of death. In KwaZulu-Natal, most of the incidents are actually shootings. And the challenge with these shootings in KwaZulu-Natal is that, for instance, due to various circumstances, people are armed, and in some instances they involve, for instance, people are, they're armed, they shoot at the police. But the ICD can't just leave those cases uninvestigated and just say, okay, the police say these people were armed inside of the police. The ICD does its best to investigate those cases, and it takes a while to investigate some of them also, because witnesses may not be easily traced and so on. But the number of cases carried over is less than, in this period, is less than what was carried over from the previous financial year. And that number has actually decreased. Thank you, Chair.
Do you investigate
here in the height? Shootout between the police and the hardened criminal. Do you investigate that?
Yes, Chair, we're doing.
Oh.
Thanks once more, Honourable Chairperson. Maybe I missed that response to my question with regard to the poisoning. I believe it's the poisoning of inmates, those two people. I wanted to know, how do these inmates get poisoned? Who poisons them? Is it the police or are the inmates themselves? And if it's the inmates, how do they access this poison? I believe in the eyes of cells, and they get searched before they go in there. The other one was with regard to the 112. Maybe can you say when? Yes, the 112. The ICD doesn't care maybe, because we have visited a number of police stations where we find that inmates have objects that can and made them commit suicide in one way or the other? Is it because of that, the 112 of the deaths that occurred as a result of suicide? And the seriousness, Mr. Francis, you indicate that some challenges were mentioned in February. I thought maybe we are confining ourselves today to the annual report, which then tells me that, or which then says to me that whatever challenges, whether you mentioned them last year or even when, but the challenges that relate to whatever the issues that we have mentioned here need to be highlighted, and even the strategies or the mechanisms that you are going to employ to address those challenges. So I believe that the answer that you gave to my question it doesn't really carry for me, because I'm confined myself. Say I was in February, and I believe in February we are not dealing with the annual report. It was something else. Thanks.
Yes, sir. The question is relating to the whether we investigate incidents of where members of the police are involved in shootout with a gang in a high. Yes, we do investigate those incidents. If persons then die, suspects die as a result of in that particular incident. Despite the fact, I mean, we have to investigate to establish whether the shooting basically, the police, for instance, act as in terms of Section 49 of the Criminal Procedure Act, and we have then have to make that determination. Okay. With regard to suicide, the 112 cases, our role there is to, I mean, like any other case in police custody, we go, it gets reported to the ICD, we go to the scene, and then normally this would have been in a police holding cell. We go to the scene and we find that either the person is still hanging at that particular point in time. If the article or the item that has been used is an item which was supposed to have been confiscated by members, for instance, a belt, shoelaces, for instance, we will then make recommendations for action to be taken with regard to the fact that, you know, standing orders have not been complied with. But you cannot charge the member with culpable homicide because of it is suicide. And we found that various items have been used, for instance, a shed, which you cannot confiscate from a person. Mattress, springs from mattresses have been cut. Various items which unfortunately cannot be confiscated from a person when this person, you know, is taken into custody. Those are some of the issues of the findings that we have made. And Chairperson, with regard to just want to follow up or with regard to the issue of natural causes. One of the perhaps I take the point that you have raised, Chairperson, with regard to that as Parliament you would be interested to know whether the police are, you know, how soon do they, for instance, attend to a person who is complaining of illness. That's something that certainly we have to give attention to. What we have been doing, it's been to determine whether the person that died in police custody, is this person, are the police, for instance, to blame in terms of, this person's death. For instance, did this person indeed die of natural causes, or was this person, for instance, assaulted by members of the police, or by inmates, and the police, for instance, just simply turned a blind eye or ignored, you know, those cries by these people. But we'll then take it forward a step further in terms of what you are saying. But the only thing that we can say, I mean, would there have been like general complaints that persons that are taken in ill, for instance, would be denied, medicine. That, for instance, at the time that they're taken into custody, they have those kind of prescriptions. There have been those general complaints that we have received, but we have not necessarily followed up in cases of natural causes. That this could, for instance, there could be a link because of either the medicine was denied or there was a delay in terms of making sure that the person immediately, as they complain, then they're taken to hospital. But that's something that we'll certainly pay attention to. Perhaps if you could then proceed with the response. Yes. If I may proceed, Chairperson, with regards to some of the questions that are still outstanding. There was a question with regards to Western Cape, for instance, Mpumalanga and KZN, you know, with regards to the workloads. Why did they have to carry so many? Western Cape, for instance, had a problem of two positions, critical positions, one of an assistant manager, which post was the person was suspended for over the particular the reporting period. Although that has since been addressed because the person was found guilty, but the process now been filled. So that had a negative impact in terms of staff complement in that office, including a position of a senior investigator. Similarly, in Mpumalanga, we had a situation where one staff member had taken ill for about 6 months. And that person could not provide service. Another one who subsequently resigned was charged for poor work performance, and those really had an impact in terms of the output in that particular office. But the kind of intervention that we then brought in, especially in Mpumalanga, was to take officials from the anti-corruption command to go and assist with some of the workload in that particular office. With KZN, I think Mr. Dlamini spoke particularly because of the challenge there is really the kind of cases that they have been receiving, which are mostly deaths in police custody as a result of police action. And also given the fact that they have been carrying a substantial number of accounts from the previous financial year, again also related to that. So, you know, the delay in the length of time that takes in terms of dealing with the majority of death cases has got that negative effect in terms of what they are able to do. This is one of the provinces that, in terms of the cases that go to court, they are carrying a huge workload. This particular province, the KZN office. That's my response, in respect of the three provinces in terms of the issue of the huge workload. Then, with regards to the question that Chairperson referred to, that is relating to the escape. Chairperson, yes, I acknowledge the fact that the report talks to, it's a 208-209 report. But will it be a request from the minister, an instruction from the minister in December 2009, to specifically, and I will, and this is, I just want to indicate, this is a summarized version of the report, because of the whole report, a comprehensive report exists, and we can make that available to Chairperson. And I also just need to acknowledge what the first Chairperson said, I think on the 5th, with regards to one of the recommendations, whether it's implementable or not. I acknowledge that, because of this, when I look at this, it is more of a request at the same time, because the Minister wanted us to look into the escapes which took place between the 2008-2009 financial year, and to review basically all those particular escapes nationally, and to look at whether there were any actions that were taken against members, review the mechanisms that exist to ensure that the escapes do not occur, are this, for instance, sufficient, and to record our findings and make recommendations. And this is exactly what we have done. But I acknowledge also, as I say, that in some of the recommendations, and our aim was that we're going to engage the police with regards to some of the recommendations, or with all the recommendations that we made, to say, are these, for instance, implementable? If not, how then do we work around them to find a solution in terms of in ensuring that certainly we bring down the rate of escape to a lower level.
The minister asked you to prepare a report on the escape 2008-2009. That's the minister. But we're talking about the annual report here, not the minister's request. We're talking about the annual report for 2009-2010. Not the minister's request, and I don't have a problem with that. One would be interested to get that information from yourself, that report that went to the minister. But you're talking about a report over a particular period specified, not per the minister's report, as to what happened during 2009-10. And are you therefore saying we don't have a report on escape for 2009-10?
Yes, Chairperson, this specific report, as I say, related to this work was undertaken during the 2009-2010 financial year, which is the period that we're reporting on at this point in time. Hence it is included in this particular report, because one Chairperson, we've utilized investigators to deal with this particular request from the minister. As you can see, in terms of the methodology that we use, investigators were sent out to stations, specifically where this escape has taken place, because we could not just simply sit in the office and say, okay, this is how we're just going to review this thing. Part of identifying the problems was to go to these particular stations and see, these are the number of escapes that happened, for instance, in San City Police Station or in Mawato Police Station, and identify, look at the trends, what are the trends in this particular station, and then to be able to come up with those recommendations. The work was undertaken during the reporting period, 2009-2010. However, it was for the specific, it was only for 1 year, for the 2008-2009.
Do you normally report on it as ICP? You don't?
No, we don't.
Okay, no, I understand now. Notable judge, notable analyst, notable
I think you have, because that's what question I was going to ask. This year is reporting something for 2008, so what's going to happen when you give an annual report now for... But if he has answered you, they don't give a date, then it's fine. So I was going to worry that it means within this year that they're going to give a report, they're going to be one financial year behind. But I think I'm covered by your answer, by your question.
Listen, I still don't have answers to the question that I've posed in terms of the measurable objectives and the wrong measurable objectives next to some of these supposed 18, etc. The preliminary report within 48 hours, 180 days, etc. All the other non-measurable objectives. I'm still not clear. If it's not, I must also be honest that I'm very worried about the amount of overtime that was spent on program one. For what is basically a job that should be run off the mall. Daily task. If you look at the amount spent on overtime, and the total amount for that matter, but I to some extent I support overtime where it's got to do with program two and it's got to do with your investigators. But if you look at 860,000 rand overtime, you just ask yourself how many permanent employees you could have appointed to do the actual work. Secondly, Chairperson, also this issue of the vacancy rate, again, what should be in the narrative is not how did you arrive at the figure. How long has this been vacant? How long does it take to fill those positions? Because it's clear that many of these positions, 6 months, are not filled in time, and therefore there's this huge thing. But I would like to get an answer, Mr. Bonner, on my question about all your tables from page 18 onwards, where your measurable objectives are not there.
And in fact, I think we've got to move on to the next round of questions. Yes, because members will still want to respond to questions, and I think we're taking long to respond to questions. So I'm giving you 5 minutes more to respond to all outstanding questions than I've taken. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to respond to the Honourable Member's question about the two cases of poisoning, of deaths that are due to poisoning. In fact, fact, both of them happened in Gauteng. One was a case of domestic violence matter, where a domestic violence was reported, and while the victim went to report the matter to the police, apparently the deceased took place before he was incarcerated. When he got into custody, he was gasping, and the ambulance was called, and he died before that. And the second one, it was the person that took place prior to being arrested. So because we have not had a situation where a person takes place while in custody.
David, time in Mpumalanga.
Yes. But
you also, in your report, you have said when these prisoners come from court, they are not safe. So it's possible. That's what your report is saying, that they are not safe, and that is why they will bring in knives and so on and so forth. We've also seen they don't shoot things and so on in the police hall themselves. They are safe. So it's possible. It's not like it's not possible if they've not taken a poison in police custody, it's because they decided not to take it, but it's not because it's impossible. They can. And I'm saying you're going to get one. If you don't, I'll ask you why you did not get it, because it was a prison bomb. Okay? No, in one of the prisons, I think it's the governing it. Yeah.
Chair, there was a question relating to the 55 officials and 36 officials that we trained and whether we've been able to retain them. Yes. These are mostly the case analysts and the monitors. We have actually seen stability in program 2 and program 3. The challenge has been, in terms of staff turnover, has mainly been in program 1. So yes, those people that we have trained, we have been able to retain them in the department.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you want to tell me that police take a person who is gasping because he took a poison at home to the police station? Is it what I'm assuming?
Thank you, Captain. If I may respond, the person took poison before he was even arrested. When he was arrested, it was not clear whether he was sick or not, but with time, as the poison, I think the poison on the body reacted to him, then he started having gasping or having some foam on the mouth, and then that's when they called the police, and he died on the scene. They didn't take it with him, except the baby.
The more we get responses, the more we maybe we have this maybe a mind race. But it wasn't clear that this person is sick. But then, what guarantee or what evidence does the directorate have that this person took the poison before he was even arrested? Because when the person was arrested, there were no signs. And how do they arrive at that determination? How do you arrive at that determination?
Thank you, Chief. When we do an investigation, we do it holistically. So when that allegation that a person is in prison, the person will go through the issue of the hands where they look at the textbook. Then upon getting that, then you get to find whether there are any witnesses around what had happened. In other words, the results of the criminal investigation lead you to where you go. So there was an allegation that at the post-mortem, the finding was that he had poisoned himself. We then went back to the house to find out what happened, because there was an allegation that at the post-mortem, he died before he was even put in the cell. As he was arriving, he was getting out of the van. So at home we punish the poison, and we use those things for the cockroaches. And that is really close to the weapon. Thank you.
Honorable Sir.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm very much concerned with regard to my other question, which was not actually responded to. My question was actually referring to the irregular expenditure of our funds in the ICD, where it was indicated that 14,000 of the money and 145,000 of the money was used not properly according to they didn't follow the proper procedure. And some of the money they've recovered some of the money. But my question was, if a person used the money wrongly, and you recover the money, then you leave that person, or what action are you taking against that person who actually who didn't follow the procedures in terms of getting that money? So my question was actually not answered. So I'm worried that actually this is also another part of that is coming from the Auditor General. That was the findings from the Auditor General. So I think maybe if I could get the answer, if there is an answer. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. I think I missed that one. I thought the review referred to it, that was covered. But then what happened in this particular instance is that the summons executors were supposed to attend the scene. In fact, the taking, the ACC, they were supposed to attend the test, when the civil test. Yeah. Now, what we do, we put them in a hotel. Now, later, the taping was cancelled. But then they did not inform the people who should cancel to the hotel to say one more coming there. So we had the department was to pay. So we had to recover the money from them. But it's not like they stole money or they used the money. It's the money that the department had to pay, and they didn't inform anyone that they're not going there. They just refused to cancel. So we recovered the money from them. That is what happened. And they've been warned to say this would never have happened again, then it's going to be a charge of misconduct something. That is what happened to the people.
See, maybe just to ask, regarding the fraudulent travel claim, the 12,000 warrants, I mean, again, raised against the official, but there was also a disciplinary process. So be assured of it.
Thanks, sir. There's a question that was asked about the presidential hotline, where the member asked where do we get information from the presidential hotline. We normally get the information electronically. What happened, the people, they will log their complaints to the presidential hotline, and then the presidential hotline will cassette a request to us, we investigate, and then the turnaround time in terms of responding back to the presidential is 48 hours. And then another question was on the station audit. Chairperson, we've got about 1,116 stations nationally. And what we do as ICD, we set ourselves a target. For example, we set for this expansion layer that we're going to audit 198 stations. This 442 is also the repeat. What we did, we will revisit those stations. But unfortunately, we didn't cover all the provinces. The provinces that did the repeat was the Free State and the Northern Cape. So what we normally do after we compile, remember that our report, we normally have to indicate the status of the station, and then we also give the recommendation. Then we send that report first to the area commander, station commander, and then from the station commander it goes to the area commissioner. And then we also give them time so that they can respond to the report. And after that, we then compile the report, and then we also table the report when we table the DDA. Thanks. My apologies, it's not the area provincial commission. And then the issue of the research report. The research report, we do have the research report, but we did not include in the annual report. We do have the research separately. So what we do, we can just send the chapters in the copies of the research that we've conducted this year. It's three research reports. Thanks.
We're going to take a round of what is the question? Marcus Mitzelman, outstanding from Mr. Balloy. The measurable objectives for the issues raised that are not measurable. The fact that they are measurable objectives taken next to issues that have got nothing to do with it. 180 days report versus the 48 hours rated. And I can give you an example on every single page and every single table of those that I've mentioned to you.
Chairperson, this table doesn't talk to the target for me that rejected. These are your service delivery standards, page 18. Oh. Yeah, from page 16. These are service delivery standards that we have in the department. To say, for instance, a complaint should be registered within 48 hours. An invoice should be paid within 30 days. I just give an example. So these are six standards that we have as a department. Six standards which are public, six standards which the different units should adhere to. To say, have you been able to register your case within 48 hours, for instance?
I'm not going to delay the situation further. All I'm going to say is through you that they come back in writing on this issue. Because clearly, I hear what you say, but actual achievement against standards. Say, what is the actual achievement? It's not reflecting that, sir. And the second one, production of preliminary reports within 180 days. Versus report captured within database within 48 hours. You go to the next one, you've got the same actual achievement. You go to the next one, you've got the same actual achievement. The one of the 30 days of the DPP that I've highlighted to you. So all I'm saying to you, citizen, is that maybe apply your mind and then come back with an answer.
Mr. Baloyi? Okay. I will agree, because as a matter of fact, as service deliver, all departments are required to develop a service deliver improvement plan. The following table reflects the components of the SDI plan, as well as progress made in the implementation of the plan. Main services, investigation of all debt in police custody and as a result of police action and of misconduct or offences committed by subs and MPS members, actual customers, victims, potential customers, partners, standards of service, family liaison conducted immediately and on an ongoing basis, actual achievement against standards, written confirmation and docket. I think it will be important for us to get a written because for me this, I just don't understand. And surely you will understand that we want to hold you accountable for this. And if we don't even understand what it means and yes.
Yeah, if I can just respond to that specific one. The standard of service here is that we expect that service are visited immediately. There's that kind of liaison on an ongoing basis to the victim. Now, the actual achievement against the standard, for us to be able to see whether that has been done, whether there has been that liaison, there should be some confirmation in the docket. In fact, if one wants to determine whether there has been that liaison in terms of victim A, whether this is the same, that must be in the docket. There must be that effort in the process to confirm that that has been done. That is what we need.
See, Mr. Baloyi is doing exactly what we're asking not to do. He's taking one example, because we can take every single one of those examples and we can actually show you that there are some of them that are not talking to the actual performance. The second question that arises out of this, if we take your answer that you've given now, is where do you measure it? Because quite frankly, the Auditor General says, and the program too, that he didn't find documents to prove what you claim here. So that becomes the second issue. Where do you measure it? The auditor general statement is clearly said here, and the program too. No documentational proof to verify claims. And I'm not talking financial claims, I'm talking service delivery claims. And look at this, just look at the 48 hours, everywhere where you say that is your measurable objective. So please, Mr. Baloyi, don't take one incident and try and justify it. Look at the whole thing and he says the problem, come back to us.
We are agreeing to that. Second round of questions, if members of another group of people, if you want to ask questions. Honorable Anna, Honorable Yachter, in that order.
No, I've got only one question, Chair. If you look at the presentation of today, slide number 26, and you compare it with slide number 47, can they correlate? Because the syllabus epicards are different from each other. Can somebody explain that in those syllabus? Because it seems as if I'm getting lost. If you look at the workload by classification of 2009-2010, and you go again to the result 5 years, here the changes of that in the police custody. Look at what is happening, that and so on and so forth. Can somebody explain those data? Because I don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair President. On the presentation, slide number 7, it is indicated here that there were about 10 million rand that was not spent, which were supposed to be utilized in call centers and relocation of national offices. And that amount actually was escalated. So I just want to know, actually, why is this money escalating, and what measures are they put in place to make sure that all those things that they budgeted, they actually are realized. And the other question is with regard to the staff, those who are actually resigning from the department, from the organization. We have about 11 on the president of 17 on the staff table. There are about 11 people who actually resigned from the organization. So I just want to know why so many people resigned. Are they actually not being treated well, or what is actually the problem for so many people to resign, or else we need people to come into the organization? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. Short questions. The first one is in terms of Cape City. Again, it's because of the lack of narrative. Disciplinary hearings reflected there five male, etc., etc. What is the progress? Where are we with those disciplinary hearings? Secondly, page 31. See, page 31 on the performance agreement, as well as the filling of S&S posts, why is the executive director not reflected? It's as if the executive director has not been appointed. In table 8, for instance. Why is the executive director not reflected? Did the executive director sign a performance agreement? I know it's with the minister, it's not within the department. But 34, the performance reward. I must say, I find it questionable that the department with this kind of output that we've seen here, with the number of matters of emphasis that is raised within the Auditor General's report, with a staff component, actual staff component of 264 or 274, actual justifies almost a million rand in rewards and bonuses. I really question that. Chairperson, then last question that I have. Last question, page 153, no supporting source documents.
what has been done to correct that situation, the Auditor General Program 2. And then page 73, very last question from my side. I would just like to know how this table comes about. That's got absolutely nothing to do with each other. Death in police custody, 34%. Death as a result of police action, 66%. What is it saying to us? Is it saying that the 100% that is reflected there, those are the reasons? The one is death in police custody, 34%, death as a result of police action, 66%. And if you look at that picture, does that mean in 100% of those cases the police were guilty? The table is really not making any sense to me.
Thank you, Chair. On your presentation document, page 35, you are discussing ghost cases. You are saying withdrawn cases on the DVA 11, criminal cases 98, misconduct, all in all, we come to 186. When these are withdrawn cases, to me it would say and represent that the way you conduct, you process your cases is very, very emotional, and you accuse people without reasons. And what do you do after withdrawing this case to the people you accuse? They're talking about 5,427 unsubstantiated cases. What is this? What happened unsubstantiated? I don't understand that. To me it means you react and very emotional. You say people have done this without enough evidence. And instead of doing some other work, you do work on hearsay. I can put it that way. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. The first is relating to the station order. I listened to the reply or answer that was given just now. But it seems clear to me there's no real plan in terms of these audits, because one of the questions that I actually asked is what's the cycle of it? Do we have an agreed cycle if we have visited each and every police station within 5 years, within 10 years, etc.? That certainly wasn't clear, unless I missed that. But it certainly didn't seem to come out. And I was saying, you know, for instance, and in fact what was said was that many of these station orders were actually repeat visits. In fact, then I want to ask the question, how many stations has the ICD never visited? Do we know which police stations we haven't visited? And do we know which police stations we're visiting in the new financial year that we already got that plan? So that was just on that. Chair, there's a question here that I'd like to ask, and it's intriguing me, because if I look on page 34 of the annual report, it deals with the performance rewards. Now, I'm wondering why this is done by race classification, certainly. My first question, why? But secondly, it's there, and it tells us that, for instance, now I'm reading from the annual report, Chairperson, and it tells us that white received an average of 29,000 reward. It tells us African, Asian, colored, why the difference? I'd like to understand why the difference? Is it based on management positions? What is the reason? I'd just like to know. I mean, I've read it in the annual report, and I'd just like to know what the reasons are for that.
Thank you very much, members. The Auditor General, on findings on reporting of predetermined objectives, the Auditor General is saying the ICD is not compliant with regulatory requirements. The Auditor General is saying reported information was not reliable. Saying sources of information were not submitted. And furthermore, the Auditor General is saying to yourself, on findings on compliance with laws and regulations, there was lack of an efficient, effective, and transparent system of financial and risk management and internal control, including an approved fraud prevention plan. And the question from ourselves on findings on procurement and contract management resulting in irregular expenditure. Question that was asked by Honorable Chair. It says deviation from competitive bidding not justified. So it means you deviated and it is not justified. The Auditor General says the supply chain management officials were not adequately trained. And the question that one has is, what are you doing? What have you done in order to correct all these things? And the question that has been asked, one of the questions that has been asked here is on your spending on overtime, which I'm not sure whether really you've provided us with acceptable responses to those questions. But also, I want to go to the report itself. Just for clarity's sake, on page 176 of the report, the financial statement, consultants, contractors, and agency outsourced services. 2008-2009, you spent $661,000. 2009-2010, 1 million plus. On inventory, 2008-2009, you spent 1 million plus. The following year, an increase of more than 300% to 4.2 million. And then on operating or owned and leasehold property furniture, this is the 1 year. The previous year you spent 8.2 million, and this time you spent 3.2. Can you explain these increases and drastic decreases as well? On page 187 of the financial report, transport assets. Seemingly you disposed up to about 2.2 million worth of your transport assets, but added nothing, according to the statement. And what does this mean? Does it mean that you have less vehicles now? Can you just explain that? Does it mean that you didn't buy any vehicles during that financial year? As according to this, can you just explain to us as to what this means? Can you please respond? You only have 10 minutes to respond to all these questions.
May I just respond to the statistical questions again? The withdrawal of cases there on slide 35 and the unsubstantiated That refers to when an investigation has been conducted and before a matter is disposed of, a finding must be made whether there was a case to be answered by the police, in which case we will say the finding will be substantiated. If there was no case against the police, the matter will be unsubstantiated. But we do have instances where there is a case, but the victim will actually withdraw. In that case, they submit a withdrawal statement, and it's taken to the director of public prosecution, who then accepts it, and the matter is withdrawn. We have such cases, for instance, in the Northern Cape, where it was a serious threat, but this victim, who had lodged a complaint against her husband, who is a police officer, withdrew the case and the DPP accepted. And then 46, slide 46 and 26. Basically, the one slide refers to the workload. The workload, which is your cases that you carried from the previous financial year, plus the cases that you received during the reporting financial year. Now, the other slide refers to only the cases that you received during the financial year. So that is why the two will never be the same, because they're speaking to two different things. And then page 73, the graphic, the figure 5. Basically, that graphic refers to, it breaks down. If you look at page 72, the heading there, it's death in police custody and death as a result of police action. Then it starts with this definition, and then it talks about the death received per month. And then it breaks this into death in police custody and death as a result of police action. And it shows you basically in a graphic form that death as a result of police action accounted for 66% of the 860 deaths, and 34% were deaths in police custody. There, the deduction therefore is that most of the deaths were the result of police action. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Chair, the response with regards to the AG, with regards to no sufficient body evidence being found, we have acknowledged that the ED spoke about the case management system that is currently being revamped, and specifically the query related to the issue of whether the verification, that there is no verification with regards to registration and allocation, which is one of the targets that we have as a program. Now, with the new case management system, Chairperson, once it is implemented, we will be in a position to verify that kind of information. And it is work that is still going on. It's a huge project, because if we've identified the shortcomings in terms of our current case management system.
First, regarding the session on the session audit, the cycle of visiting the session audit will set our target to quarterly. We normally visit session audit quarterly, and so far we've done about 180 session audits, so we're left with plus or minus 22 sessions for this year. And then for the coming financial year, we're definitely going to increase the target, because as you can see in our report, we've exceeded the target. So we're going to increase from 198 maybe to 450 session audits per annum for the coming financial year. Thank you. From the target that we set ourselves, we said we were going to audit 198 sessions. So we've done 180. So it means that the lag for this financial year is 22 sessions. Thanks.
I don't want to get involved in a discussion here, but is it possible that we get given something in writing on this? Because the question I'm actually asking is, we've got 1,000 odd police stations, 1,117 police stations in the country. All right. Now, the question I'm asking is there, over what period do we intend to visit? Is it, do we plan to visit each and every police station every 5 years, every 3 years, every 10 years? So I'm just saying, can we get a response to these things in writing? As well as also to how many police stations have never been visited by the ICE? But I don't want to get involved in the discussion right now. That's just...
That should be indeed important, because if we, when we visit police stations, the DVA, for instance, is a serious challenge. And sometimes we have an ICD person accompanying us and raising questions together with the members of parliament when they're supposed to be raising those questions when we are not there in correcting the decision. So it's really important for us to get that information in. Okay.
Yeah, Chairperson, maybe just one or two issues and then I'll ask Mr. Beloy and Ms. Engelbrecht just in terms of the finances. In terms of the non-compliance with the strat plan, of course it was with the license of 09-10, we dealt with those issues in the new strat plan that we tabled at Parliament. Just regarding the consultants, I think that was issued or the chair referred to, the major expenditure there refers to the consultants we used in terms of the monthly template that was developed in terms of ensuring better performance reporting and then also in terms of the performance agreement. Because the performance agreement had to be aligned also with the specific objective. So that's the major reason for that escalation that you would see in column on 172. Yes, the right performance agreement has been signed. Thanks, Chair. If I may start with that one, the reason why I'm putting the report is because during this financial year, which is covered by the report, the ED was not appointed. The quota was in vacant. He got appointed in August. So there was nobody who could sign the ED's PA.
The appointment of the executive director happened during the financial year in question. The appointment, 2009.
Oh, my apologies. I think I think the other thing is that with the ED came to the department, it took about quite some time before it's the commitment was finalized. Jason, I think the table there on page 31 says signing of performance agreements by SMH members as on 30 June 2009. So, you know, I was appointed 2 months after that period. Maybe that's the reason for the lacuna.
I raised the question, why put it to us that way? Why not just click on the whole financial year? Because even the appointment of this executive director is not reflected in this annual report.
Chairperson, the reason is because it's a requirement that every department must, by the 30th of June, submit a formal agreement of the members who have been appointed as retrospective.
Mr. Baloy, let's leave this because I'm talking about something completely different. We're talking about the annual report, not the signing of anything. With time frames or what have you. We're talking about the report that you have written, annual report, things that happened. The problem with this report, and that is why we're complaining about it, is because
you have been given a particular template and you are following it like, I don't know. Because if I were to say robot, I would seem to be insulting people, but really, it cannot. If it is not there, then you don't report about it. You are running the directorate and not anybody out there, not even the minister for that matter of fact. It is you who are running this directorate. And it is you who must report about what is happening in that directorate and take it to the minister for the minister. Because now you can say because this was signed, but the executive director was appointed during 2010, financial year, and it's not in the report. Because somebody gave you some guidelines and you are like somebody set you to say this is how you go, you open, you close. It can't be like that. That is why this report is like this. This is why these tables are not making any sense, really. You can't write it. I mean, no, let's continue. Because you can't use it as an excuse. So anything that is not here, then it's not reported on. And you must accept that. This is the annual report. And it is you who are running that institution. Not us, not anybody but yourself. And it is you who know what we have done there. That is why your report, you talk about this South African Human Rights Commission report. It's like you took it from someone else and put it there. It's so irrelevant in your report. But surely if you had reported it yourself, you would have reported stuff that this is relevant in the report. But I want to close this meeting. Because the way you are responding to the question, you are just making me emotional about it. And I try to really not to end it.
Thank you. And one of the questions was, why did so many people resign, about 11 of them? There are various reasons why people resign. Like I indicated in my presentation that people get promotions elsewhere and were not able to call the offer, the kind of the salaries that are given to them. One, because we did not have the pool, that level that person has been offered. Secondly, we may not have the budget. We don't have the budget to come that offer and retain the people. That's the reason why people resign. And then the other thing is that most of the people who resign are people at lower levels who are still very ambitious in terms of getting to top positions. Some of them go back to school and those kind of things. So that's the reason why they resign. The other question was, what is the progress regarding disciplinary cases? The case that was indicated here, I think the chairperson allows, I think we can send in a report to indicate each one of them, how far we've gone with such cases, each one of them. We will do that. Performance rewards, why so many people get performance rewards? Well, there are concerns in the report that are places of nature. If you look at the table there, the people who got performance rewards have been grouped in terms of levels. From level 3 to 12, we have got 250 employees in the department. From level 3 to 10, the lowest rank up to, and I think that is 212. This is the record for the 250 employees. Of those people, it's only 58 who got performance rewards, which is 23% of that, or in that bag. And at the SMS level, we've got 17 SMS members. Only 9 who got performance rewards. So maybe to reflect on the lower level, I think I'm not very sure whether they can be penalized for the issues that have been raised in the report, in the internal report. I mean, if they've performed in terms of the performance agreement, I think they deserve to get something. Why is the beneficiary profile in this 34 reflected on the basis of race? Again, I have taken note of the chairperson because, again, it's the template that was given to say you need to keep that thread down of the benefits to say in terms of race. So it's a template that was given. So we have taken note of all the concerns regarding the template. That's the reason why we were given that information, because that's what the first time. I would request Ms. Engelbrecht to assist in with financial assistance.
Department, they give you
whatever guidelines to provide them with information. And immediately you then take that and just that information as if you make it your annual report. I think that is a problem. I really believe that that is a problem. And it is actually responsible for this report, which we think it is of low quality. Good as the information that you have and that you submit to the public service is important, can actually be used for compiling the report, but it cannot be the first and the last information. And it cannot be reproduced as it is required by that department, because here you are writing a report. A report that as we read it must talk to what has been happening in the institution. Good as, and I indicated last week that we are accepting this report, but really I think it will be important that it goes to our minutes that we accepted this report with serious reservations and serious concerns, because this report goes to the Parliament record and during our time as members of this portfolio committee. And I must really say that the quality of this report is just disappointing to say. And as I'm saying this, I'm requesting you to go back and review this report. Compare this report with any other report. Any report. But I can actually refer you to the SARS report. With all the shortcomings that I did, but just go to the report and see how they've compiled their report. It's a big department, but they've compiled a report that you can actually see it as being professional, that actually is showing some direction of the department. After you have read it, you can then come up with questions out of what you have read in the report. I'm not sure, really. I think it's not doing that. The mere fact that there are so many tables in this report without any information, without any narration of that to say this is what the table means, it makes everything very difficult to understand and to make sense out of. And executive director, really, if we were to receive a report like this come next financial year, we will not accept it. We won't accept the report as a portfolio committee. We will simply reject the report, simple. As to what the consequences will be, that will be something else. But we cannot accept a report like this in future. And therefore, we're hoping that this will be the very last time that from the ICD we're receiving a report like this. It definitely must be the last time. And I am requesting you to go back and reread this report. And on your own, see if we are just being funny or just being impossible as members of parliament. I don't believe so. I'm not an expert on any writing of any report, but I think this report is of extreme low quality. In fact, it talks to something else but not the annual report. It is responding to questions asked by somebody for something else than the annual report. The information here can actually part or of the information can be used for annual report, but not in the manner in which it is appearing in this report. We can't have a report that talks to HIVNA and it says, have you appointed a delegated person for, and they say, yes, it's Cindy Chikunga. I've never seen any report with names of people. I've checked. I was serving in the correctional services in the past. The name of, or the names of people that will appear in the annual report, it will be that of the minister, the head of department, or whoever. But I will not see names of people, not even, in the report itself. But in this report, you have names of people, because this is how you've decided to write the report. And as I come really after this engagement, and probably happy that we've had this engagement, I wasn't sure whether we're going to go through with this meeting again today. I must say that it's the last time that we're going to accept a report of this quality. And I'm saying that without any fear, because there are people are supposed to ensure that whatever that comes out of the directorate is of quality.
who are paid for that. And therefore, it's not that one is taking volunteers in the department, but we're talking about people who are paid for doing quality work. And this is a document, one very important document that you produce per year that goes out to people out there, to Parliament and everyone, and that is kept in Parliament as a record for ICD. And it cannot happen that it is of quality that is like this one this time. And thank you very much for the meeting, and thank you for responding to our questions. I don't believe we'll be able to stay, and therefore I think we all and until we meet next year, this meeting is adjourned.